Across the UK, a crisis is building that affects us all.
More than 3 million people are now on long-term sickness benefits, up by about a million in just 5 years. And these figures are set to get far worse.
Well, we're not going to get Britain growing again unless we get Britain working again.
I'm getting like £1,300-1,400 a month. And there's people out there working and they're not even earning that.
Already, sickness and disability benefits for working age people cost £48 billion a year, more than we spend on the police.
There is a basic economic question for government whether it can simply afford to do what it is doing now. And it is frankly bankrupting the country at the moment.
We will get the welfare bill down because we will tackle long-term sickness and support people back to work.
It's like people think that anybody who gets benefit is a scrounger. It's like you're a criminal just because you're disabled.
My name is Fraser Nelson, and I've been investigating this for years. I think this is the greatest challenge the new government faces because the system right now is in crisis.
Britain's benefits scandal. Channel 4 Dispatches. Reporter Fraser Nelson. Hashtag C4 Dispatches.
Across the country, 7% of the working age population is claiming long-term sickness benefits. And the numbers are rising fast. Nearly 900,000 more people are set to join them by the next election. That's like losing the combined workforce of Birmingham and Glasgow from the economy. This is the crisis that the new government has inherited. As a journalist, what I can't work out is how such a huge scandal is going almost completely unnoticed. When unemployment hit 3 million under Margaret Thatcher, there was outrage. But when the number on sickness benefits hits 3 million, almost nobody seems to ask why, how on earth we got to this stage, or what life is actually like for those now caught in the system. Here in Boston, this church gives out free lunches twice a week. The number of people in the town on long-term sickness benefits has doubled in the last 5 years alone. That's the fastest increase in the country. This is my chance to speak to some of them and hear their stories.
I worked in security up until a couple of years ago, and I had to claim long-term sickness. I was diagnosed with ADHD at 6 years old, which is... It wasn't fully understood back then. I don't cope with things as well as I probably should. So I went to see the GP. He put a referral in. It's been nearly a little over a year now.
A year? Yeah. To be seen by the NHS for mental health?
Yeah. I'm 37 now. I've got plenty of good working years ahead of me. I don't want to be put out to pasture yet.
Fraser's sitting with a white man who's bald with blue eyes and glasses.
I've had mental health problems for several years, quite a few years. I was diagnosed with bipolar disorder, coupled with anxiety and depression, severe depression. I was a software architect working for a large IT corporation. Gradually, my situation got worse. And in the end, I had to give up work. I couldn't manage.
Right. How long have you been in Boston, Lorraine?
I've been here 27 years.
What's the situation?
I'm qualified working with special educational needs. I worked for over 30 years of my life. I was diagnosed with PTSD. It's not a curable illness.
Right.
During COVID, I was sacked 4 times, and the stress of that just allowed my condition transpired out of control.
Right. Do you want to work again?
Of course I want to work again.
And do you feel able to work at the moment?
No.
There seems to be a bit of a pattern amongst those I spoke to. They were all working, life seemed to be going pretty well for them. But then a mental health episode knocked them for 6. Now, that's actually not unusual. About 2/3 of those who apply for sickness benefits mention depression, anxiety, or something similar. But instead of being given the help they need to get back into work, they end up sucked into a benefit system from which they're unlikely to ever emerge.
69% mention mental health. A high street.
There's another side to this crisis, the costs to the economy of the missing workers. There are now more than 800,000 vacancies in the UK, more than almost any time since before the pandemic.
And in Boston, companies like JLS Furnaces are crying out for workers. It's run by Leslie and Kevin Trott.
We build ovens and furnaces for aerospace and automotive. We have about 15 staff that work for us, and we've got some pretty large projects going on at the minute.
She's looking for a trainee metal worker on a starting salary of about £26,000 a year.
We've been looking to fill the position since probably March, April, and struggling. We pay above the national wage, so I'm not really sure what's putting them off. You know, maybe because they get more on benefits. I honestly don't know.
Long-term sickness benefit in itself doesn't pay more, but it usually comes with additional benefits. Calculations for dispatches show a package for a single person can be around £24,000 a year. That's close to what Leslie's offering.
Well, we had that young lad come in, didn't we, on Tuesday. He came to trial day. I always offer somebody a trial day.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
And he asked to leave at 1 o'clock. He went home, waste of time he was. We must have had 15 to 20 people apply for the job. And out of that, five have turned up for the interview.
Fraser sits down with Work and Pensions Secretary Liz Kendall.
At the Department of Work and Pensions, the DWP, there's a new Secretary of State whose job it is to fix this crisis.
Keir Starmer has very ambitious economic growth targets. Are they achievable if you don't manage welfare reform?
Well, we're not going to get Britain growing again unless we get Britain working again. And one of the biggest things employers say to me is they're desperate to recruit but can't. And when I look at the public finances, this huge rise in spending is bad for the taxpayer too. Many people are working with a health condition. I think many more could with the right help and support.
We've heard lots of promises of reform for many, many years. But you're talking about a revolution. I mean, you're talking...
I am talking about a revolution. When you've got a system that isn't working for anyone, you need big change. Now, I am under no illusions about how hard that will be. I believe in work, and that everybody who can work should work. But my argument is people are crying out for help and support, and it's the government's duty to deliver that.
Liz Kendall's revolution is easy to talk about, but it will mean rewiring the entire benefits system. Starting with the first step, sick notes given out by doctors, or as they're now called, fit notes. Dr. James Howarth has been a GP just outside Boston for nearly 20 years.
The area I cover is called Spilsby.
We've got a slightly older population, a slightly poorer population, a slightly higher level of disability.
So how many patients would you typically see today? Then?
Today, probably about 50 contacts. Hey, Charlotte. Hi. How you doing? Busy? As ever?
Yes.
I've got a full afternoon?
Of course.
Okay, we'll probably pop round the corner room if that's all right,
yeah,
if it's empty.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't take too much
great.
Of your time.
Thank you.
Doctors are handing out nearly a million more fit notes than they did 5 years ago. It's a big part of what GPs do.
I think a need for a fit note might come up in about 5 to 10% of appointments. Over the last 5 to 10 years, mental health has certainly been an increasing factor in when people are feeling that they need to have a sick note.
Do you think it's appropriate that GPs are being used effectively to say yay or nay to welfare?
In a simple answer, no. It's certainly not what I signed up for, and I'm there as the patient's advocate. I don't often refuse a fit note. What I may often do is have a conversation about changing cannot work to maybe fit to work if we perhaps pursue different adjustments to that working environment. I don't think it's right that we have a role in long-term sick notes. We aren't the DWP police. We're not there to tell them that they can't have a sick note. We're there to help them stop being sick.
The last Conservative Work and Pension Secretary wanted to shift responsibility away from GPs and send patients to occupational health specialists.
They're going to the doctor for the six-minute appointment. 94% of the time, they are given a note that says, you are not capable of any work whatsoever.
94% of the time.
94% of fit notes, that's the outcome. And then they drift further on to, along the benefit system until they're in this incapacity benefit cohort, where they are basically left alone. And then you've really lost somebody in terms of being able to help them back into work. So, for example, if you have somebody who perhaps has a mental health condition, maybe aged 18, say, and that's allowed to become a journey onto those long-term benefits, which they never get off, that is a real full-life tragedy.
We understand that the new government is thinking along the same lines. Instead of issuing fit notes, they may hire more welfare advisors to steer those managing illness towards jobs that they can do.
We've heard from a GP who says he doesn't think he should be the DWP police, as he puts it, but a 10-minute doctor's appointment is not a fitting gateway. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I would say the absolute key issue is this. We need to put together a package of measures here which really meets the challenges that we face. Not simply you fall out of the workplace, you're written off, you're categorised as can work or can't work, and then left. That isn't working for people or for taxpayers.
Manchester. Fraser's on an escalator.
I've come to Manchester, a booming city trying to fill 20,000 job vacancies. We've arranged to meet somebody who has his fit notes and now wants to apply for sickness benefit.
I can't look for work because obviously with the medication I'm on, with my mental health, I'm unfit for work. I drink every day, so imagine me in the pussy of the machine. I chop my finger off, look, I've already done it once.
Anthony has been out of work for years and is finding things pretty tough.
Hopefully I'll become a millionaire, but that's another story.
Right now, he gets nearly £100 a week in unemployment benefits. But if he's categorised as long-term sick, that doubles. What's more, he won't have to check in at the job centre to prove that he's looking for work.
Anthony's in a citizen's advice centre.
Okay, Anthony, thanks for coming today.
Dave Ormsby is helping Anthony with the forms that will have to go to the DWP.
This is the first time you've been through the work capability assessment, yeah?
Yeah, correct, Dave.
Okay. Now, it's important that we're accurate in what we record on here. You don't get points under this system for a medical condition. It's the effects of that medical condition as upon you.
Right, yeah, I'm with you, yeah.
You understand that,
yeah? Dave, of course, yeah.
He's got an alcohol dependency and a drug dependency, which are also classified as mental health conditions in the context of this assessment. Those are the grounds for him claiming today that he's incapable of work on those for those particular reasons. Still got depression?
Depression, still got anxiety, and I'm still alcohol independent. I even got my goodie bag here with my liquids in.
Okay.
I come in a taxi and then I had to go function. I've had like 6-7 cans this morning before I even function.
Okay, you still take cannabis, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So, how long have you had depression?
Too long, about 2-3 years. I was down to my mum dying, and obviously I've lost 5 siblings, you know, in the last 3 years. You know, I've dealt with a lot.
Based on my experience, he should have a reasonable prospect of succeeding and being placed into the ICE group.
Some days I don't get out of bed, some days I can't be arsed with the world. I'd rather go and get a can crack and get back in bed. Yeah. And the only reason why I've come out today is because I had to come out to do this.
The next step will be an interview with the DWP assessor, probably by phone.
Sign and date at the bottom. OK.
You don't get a chat, mum, babe. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
No, like I said, there's only you that I trust.
If Anthony's application is successful, there will be no follow-up appointment, no one checking on his health, and no one encouraging him to work.
Thank you.
Yeah. See you later. Cheers.
He'll get the money, but will he get the help he needs?
Anthony walks away from the centre.
Anthony and thousands like him are being written off at the cost of £80 million a day to taxpayers. It's seen as a critical issue by the Centre for Social Justice. Its policy director is Ed Davis.
There is a basic economic question for government whether it can simply afford to do what it is doing now if the numbers keep going up. And it is frankly bankrupting the country at the moment. We have hundreds of thousands of people who are being put on a scrap heap and never having their condition spoken about again. And actually, those people are really losing out as a result. For some, they will be completely incapable of working. For others, actually, work may be the best thing for them.
So is this another reason to be concerned, then, about a number of people on long-term sickness benefit? Not the cost, but what effect is having on their lives?
Being out of work for a long time has a huge scarring effect on your physical health, your mental health, all sorts of different things. If you are stuck at home for long periods, if you do not have people around you, that can literally shorten your life.
Fraser's sitting on a train and writing in a notebook.
One of the most astounding aspects of this is the sheer number of young people now signing up for long-term sickness benefits. Almost 200,000 under-25s have now done so, but the fastest rising group is the 25 to 34-year-olds. Now, there, the figure is 500,000. That's up 70% in just 5 years. Now, given how few people ever come off these benefits, that is a staggering waste of young life.
Keith Lee.
In Keithley, near Bradford, I'm meeting one of them. Somebody who, in theory at least, the government would like to see working.
The kids always forget something, don't they?
Amy, a 30-year-old single mother, left home at 13 and eventually ended up homeless. Like a fifth of all long-term sickness benefit claimants, she has never worked. When you were at school, then, what did you want to do? Did you have any idea?
I really wanted to be a barrister.
So how far did you get in your legal ambitions?
I managed the access module after I'd had Alfie.
Then what happened?
My pelvis decided it had other plans. Being pregnant basically broke my pelvis, so it needed fusion surgery to put it back in, keep it in place.
So you had pretty serious pelvis problems, and what did that lead to?
I need a walking stick to move, because if not, it's painful, or I fall over, or I can't go a certain way. I am in pain all day, every day. So I do suffer with mental health issues as well, CPTSD, anxiety and depression and things like that.
You look healthy, you're very articulate. You can imagine somebody looking at you and saying, look, here's somebody who seems perfectly well to me. She doesn't look like she's long-term sick.
That's the problem, though, isn't it? Just because somebody looks all right doesn't mean that they are. I use a walking stick for a reason. I don't use it for a fashion accessory.
So have you ever had a full-time job?
No. No. It sounds awful, that, doesn't it?
Can you see yourself getting one? I mean, you're still very young.
I'd like one, but the issue is finding something that I'll be able to do consistently without making my son suffer and myself suffer and losing money.
We've calculated that Amy would need to earn over £35,000 a year to match the benefits she's getting now. That's 10 grand more than the average salary around here. She doesn't see herself ever earning that. And she's worried about what might happen if she did try to work.
Look at that. I like them little patterns you've done there, look. If I find a job that's not suitable and I'm going into it and trying it, I need to know that I can bounce back onto something because I have a son. Did you get your bookmark from Monday?
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't it cool? If I went and got a job tomorrow, everything I get would stop from today, which would then mean that my rent, everything would stop. And then I've got letters coming through the door in the next 2 weeks telling me that my rent stopped and I owe this, I owe that. And where does that leave my 8-year-old, you know?
Amy wipes away tears before she puts her glasses on. Fraser's travelling in a London taxi.
Like almost everybody I've spoken to, Amy feels terrified of doing anything that might jeopardise the security she's built up around herself. I want to know if she's right to worry, because the government won't persuade people to move into work if they think they're going to be worse off as a result. Eddie.
Fraser, great to meet you.
And you, thanks for having me in. Eddie Graham works for Z2K, the charity in London that helps thousands of people like Amy navigate the benefit system every year.
A lot of people who are unwell and on sickness benefits would like to go back into work. They don't like living on very low levels of benefit income, but they are very worried and anxious and frightened about what will happen if they try and they don't succeed. So it's the insecurity and it's the fear of losing the low but stable income that they've got, which acts as a real disincentive to many people. It may well be on Treasury spreadsheets or on their modelling computers that everybody is better off in work, but when the ancillary benefits like free school meals, free prescriptions, the costs of travelling to work and things like that, for many people, taking a job, it doesn't really pay.
Back in Keighley, this is exactly the predicament that Amy is in.
Amy wants to work and clearly has the drive to do it, but she's worried that if she does, or even if she starts looking, her benefits will be cut and she could end up losing far more than she can ever hope to earn. Now, in her position, would I swap the security that she has now with the more precarious world of low-paid work? I'm not sure that I would. And that, in a nutshell, is the welfare trap. The new government needs to do something about it, and fast.
Hashtag C4 Dispatches.
Being signed off long-term sick means more money and no requirements to look for a job. It's the logical option if you're in poor health and struggling to get by.
Well, I'm just putting some flyers out to see if I can gain any extra customers.
Shane is 57 and lives just outside Birmingham. He's on basic benefits, which he's allowed to top up with part-time work.
I've been window cleaning for 25 years, and if anyone asks me to maybe clean the gutters, I'll say, yes, I could clean the gutters, but I don't fix them. I've probably had mental health problems all my life, and it got worse when I lost my wife. So that's how I ended up on the antidepressants. Always one letterbox that's stiff.
Shane applied for long-term sickness benefits after watching a video on TikTok.
I applied for the long-term sickness because of my knee problems, back problems, and depression.
His son applied and got the maximum amount, but Shane didn't, and so now he's appealing.
And my son, he seems to have been given everything left, right, and centre, like a silver spoon on a plate. He's probably close to just under £1,400 a month.
And how much do you get each month?
400.
How does that make you feel?
Best poor.
If you are on unemployment benefit, the amount you get paid compared to working is quite low. But if you are on sickness benefit, that rate can go up really considerably. And so for a person who is living in an area maybe without good jobs on unemployment benefit and they're thinking, well, I could go into work, or for a little bit less, I could have the security of sickness benefit. It's almost quite a rational decision to say, I'm going to lean into sickness benefit rather than into the world of work.
There might come a stage where window cleaning will obviously get physically too demanding for me. At the age of 57, I feel society has let me down. I am long-term sick, full stop. If I had my health, I wouldn't want to be on benefits. I found out long-term sickness benefits was better explained on TikTok than through being bamboozled by the job centre. I'm waiting on, obviously, 1st of October, my appeal. I don't know what the judge is going to tell me, but I believe you should get what you're entitled to.
Like two-thirds of applicants, Shane has highlighted his mental health. The rules around this are now being tightened to make it harder to claim. That's something started by the last government.
I think we need to have a grown-up conversation, actually, about what I would call labelling. I think there has been a tendency for, in some cases, people that have experienced the normal ups and downs of life, and we all have difficult moments in our life. But I do question whether in perhaps too many cases, particularly young people, are being labelled as having conditions or being severely depressed, etc., and treated accordingly. And I think once you have said to somebody, that is the situation you're in, it can often reinforce that sense that that's the situation that they're in. So I think there's an element of that. Difficult to disentangle it from everything else, because I think it is against a backdrop of a rise in mental health issues generally. And it's good that we're talking about mental health, and it's good that we're addressing it in a way that, of course, we didn't some decades ago.
Mel Stride, MP.
Dr. Johnson.
Nice to meet you.
And you, please. Lucy Johnson is a leading clinical psychologist at the heart of this debate. If you look at some of the surveys of those who are not working due to long-term sickness, something like 70% mention mental health problems. Is that because mental health is getting a lot worse, or is that because we're just diagnosing it more than we used to?
I wouldn't frame it as mental health is getting worse. I would say people are struggling emotionally and in very real ways, and they're certainly suffering. But I don't see these problems as best understood as being some kind of medical illness, and I hope that we might be more inclined to question some of what's going on, to question the validity of these labels. We are not, in my view, sicker in mental health terms, but we are definitely unhappier.
So what should we be doing for these people who are currently being written off and basically told not to come back for a year or 2 years sometimes?
The best and most powerful and effective mental health interventions, if you want to call them that, are things like giving people decent housing and a sense of security and belonging in their community and a safe environment and support with childcare and, you know, all the common sense things we know about. These are the cures for what you might or might not call mental health problems. They're enabling people to live secure and productive lives within communities.
What you're describing sounds difficult, and writing a welfare check is easier.
Well, often short-term solutions seem simpler.
Over 1,500 people a day are being signed onto sickness benefits.
Since 2010, the approval rate for long-term sickness benefits has more than doubled to 18%. Now, that might be because the process has become easier or because successive governments have relaxed the criteria. But I'm about to meet somebody now who thinks another factor is at play.
Sarah is a nurse who, until recently, worked as a DWP assessor. She worries that the system is too open to abuse.
Before I started this job, I went on Google and I typed in a few words, and straight away I found the criteria or the words to say to essentially get a full benefit.
Like keywords, were there?
Absolute keywords.
So presumably before other people do the assessment, they'll be Googling and they'll be finding out what's the phrase that pays.
Absolutely. Just tell them that you're suicidal has been a lot in inverted commas, which I've seen.
If an assessor is told by somebody that they're feeling suicidal, is the guidance then to put them straight into the highest category?
If at any point someone said that they were suicidal every day, straight away in that high, it's down to the integrity of that person. And sadly, my opinion is that not everyone that is claiming is quite telling the truth, which is sad, but ultimately it's going to happen. It's really frustrating to read because there's actually people that I chat to that are having them thoughts for genuine, and you really feel for those people that are going through that. But then you're getting people that, you know, after reading these forums, that actually you're lying, and that's just it, almost like discredits those that are actually really in need. So it's hard.
I want to know just how easy it is to find the advice online that Sarah told me about.
I'm just going to tell you what you need to get to support your application.
So I'm entering the world of so-called sickfluencers, people on TikTok and other platforms giving advice on how to navigate the DWP process.
That's what my channel is all relevant to, dealing with these assessments and seeing what's the best way to try and, you know, get what we need to get, that we deserve to get, without them trying to stitch us up.
But the magnitude is absolutely extraordinary. They've seemed to have, like, tens of thousands of followers.
I'm going to give you a few little tips on how to use keywords and phrases when you are providing your answers. Distress, your fourth keyword. And to make it even more effective, you can put the word psychological in front of it.
That's 1.5 million people have watched that video. Now, we're talking here about a major community. And it wouldn't surprise me if this video has got far more attention than the official government advice here.
A cluster of office buildings.
The assessments are carried out, often on the phone, by private companies.
Fraser's with a white man who's bald.
Michael Houston used to work for one. He points to another potential reason for the rising approval rate.
People are encouraged to do 6 cases a day. And if you did any more than that, you would get £80 per case. If the claimant met the highest category, then the assessment could be curtailed early, which would allow them to fit in more cases per day.
Right, and so that would be quite a significant increase. If you could do 8 cases a day...
Or even twice that number, you would be...
Seriously?
Yeah.
So there are some people doing twice the number a day?
But there would be people who would be into double figures.
Yeah. How well can you really assess over the phone whether somebody's fit to work?
Not very, in my opinion, which is one of the things that ethically and morally I didn't really feel comfortable with.
I want to know what the new government plans to do about assessments. I put what I'd heard from Michael Lancera to Liz Kendall.
We have long said that the work capability assessment isn't working. You know, it's not working for people who are in the system, and it's not working for the public finances. I think what happens at the moment is that the system divides you into those who can work and those who can't. Now, there are people, because of such severe issues, cannot work, but for many people, actually, their health condition fluctuates, their physical health or their mental health, and our benefit system has got to recognise this.
I'm catching up with Shane on the day of his benefits appeal.
Yeah, come in,
If you do get awarded it, what difference would that make in your finances?
Doubles my income.
What difference would that make to your life? What would you do with that extra?
Well, obviously, I'd be able to see my mates, socialise more, think about even getting through my driving licence because I don't drive, and taking the kids out more.
But the judge might be quite suspicious. She might think, look, if this guy's carrying a ladder around local streets, then he seems pretty fit to me.
Yeah, I know that's how it might come across, but I'm only doing things by what would improve my situation. Here we go.
Shane's tribunal is being held over the phone.
Hello.
Oh, is that Shane?
It is, yes.
He was hoping that the Citizens Advice Bureau would be representing him. But unfortunately, he's on his own and struggling.
Right, to be perfectly honest, Judge, I feel I shouldn't be working at all. I'm forced into going back to work, and this is why I've come to the appeal.
Shane is asked for evidence of his medical conditions.
Doctor, why me having to explain when you're the doctor? Are you a doctor or aren't you a doctor? Because you're frustrating. You're frustrating me now. I just don't understand what we've actually achieved today, to be honest, if we've achieved anything. Just a complete waste of bloody time.
Shane stares ahead.
Shane lost his appeal. But for those with professional help, the chances of overturning a decision can be as high as 90%. Next, I'm investigating what happens when those who have been awarded long-term sickness benefits try to escape the system.
Salford. A white man with black hair and a dark beard walks out of a car park.
Michael's been on long-term sickness benefits for 2 years. He wants to work, but the longer you're on benefits, the less likely you are to find work again. Our calculations suggest that his chances are about 1 in 20.
Hi, mate. I'm going.
He's a regular at the Loaves and Fishes community group.
I come to Loaves and Fishes probably 3 times a week. It is a good place to come and just have a cup of tea, have a cup of coffee, have some food, have a chat with people.
He opens a shed and steps inside.
We've got soil for the plants. We've got all of the tools. We've got the barrels. We've got the gloves. We've got all different kinds of seeds, what we grow. I was getting into a lot of trouble when I was in Newcastle. I met a woman in Manchester, so I decided to stay in Manchester, really. I ended up being homeless, so I'm in a hostel currently at the moment. 2-3 years ago, I was more than like depressed. All of these stuff and voices like going through my head. I couldn't handle it and I binge drinked and it blocked everything out. I went to the doctors, got put on medication, and now all of the voices and all of the stuff that I hear in my voice, it's just blocked it. Or like if I think about stuff, it just blocks it all out. So I feel much better.
Michael has a strategy. He wants to enter a trade that's desperately short of workers.
I've applied to do college, which is NVQ level 3, doing plastering, which would give us a good, decent job at the end of it. I'm looking forward just to see where the future brings, really.
A city skills building.
We set off to meet Michael on his first day of training, but he doesn't show. He says he's been told that starting the course could cost him his benefits. Back at Loaves and Fishes, Michael explains.
If I try to go to college, I want to do a NVQ level 2 in plastering. Because I'm on capability for work, when I contacted the job centre, they said you would lose your benefits. That's what they said. You would lose all of your capability benefits because you're plastering. It's classed as working. She says, if you were in a classroom doing maths or English, she said you're learning, so you would be fine. But because you're plastering, you would lose like all your benefits.
Great to meet you.
Yeah, you're okay.
Thanks for agreeing to talk to me.
It must have been quite disappointing to you to be told that if you were to start the work to improve your life, you would have the support taken away from you so much that you wouldn't be able to make ends meet while you were studying.
It makes us feel like upset. I don't understand, because when you're just on standard universal credit, they put you on courses to help you get a job, but when you're on capability for work, they don't allow you to go on any courses to get a job.
Right.
So how are you going to manage to come off it to get a job at the end of it? It's impossible.
Did you think about taking the hit, about just seeing if you could just go without the benefits, hoping that within 6 months, a year, you might be in a better place?
I'm on like £1,300-1,400 now. I would only get like about £300 or whatever.
So given how much you're getting, do you really want to come off them and go on to work that might pay you less?
I do want to come off it. I want to get a job and be independent like other people. That's what I would want to do.
Even if you might be worse off in the short term?
I would rather be successful like other people. Going to work, getting up in the morning and coming back home with friends and family. That's what I want to do. I want to be like that.
Can it really be true that Michael will lose his benefits if he starts the course? I call an expert, Sam Thomas at Z2K.
Hi, Sam, it's Fraser Nelson here.
Oh, hi, Fraser.
To see if what the job centre told Michael is right.
It sounds like the people that he spoke to at the job centre were possibly a little bit misinformed.
Right.
So you can undertake work and training if you're getting the higher rate of sickness benefits.
Mm-hmm.
But it is true that if you undertake work or training under the current system, there is a risk that the DWP could look to reassess your benefit award.
It just goes to show what a labyrinth this is. Whatever the question, there is no clear answer. Sam's a policy expert, and he says it takes him a couple of days to work out what the situation is. So what chances do we think people like Michael have?
A new survey of those in long-term sickness benefits shared with dispatches found that for nearly three quarters, fear of losing benefits is a significant barrier to finding work. Over a third said the additional income from work would not be enough to make it worthwhile. To find out more, I'm meeting Ian Porter of the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. He's one of the people behind the survey and a leading expert on the welfare system.
In theory, someone trying work, that shouldn't be a reason for triggering a reassessment of their benefits. But in practice, a lot of people fear a reassessment as a result. It's shocking that the government has been, I suppose, inept at being able to communicate basic work-related rules, and that's a basic issue they need to fix. The proportion of people on long-term sickness benefits who get back into work has been persistently low for many years now, around 1 or 2% a month.
So given the mass distrust in the system, what can the government do?
Well, one thing that they could do that would be really helpful is really bring in a comprehensive towards work guarantee. Should someone get into work and come off those sickness benefits, if that job doesn't work out, they would be able to come straight back onto the same sickness benefits they were on before and not be worse off.
That sounds like quite an expensive policy of the government.
Well, actually, that would result in more people in work. This is the type of thing that could, if it works properly, bring the benefits bill down.
The government has said it's considering something along these lines. But I'm about to encounter somebody who shows just how deep the rot has set in.
Hashtag C4 Dispatches.
The welfare system is in crisis. Politicians of all parties seem to agree on that. Gavin's story is perhaps the most shocking. It shows just how dysfunctional the system really is.
I'm a taxi driver. I've been a taxi driver over 30 years now. I applied for long-term sickness benefits because I'd undergone open-heart surgery. I had trouble getting the toilet on my own, let alone working, you know. It was really tough, really tough.
He sits in the driver's seat of his taxi.
Getting that first bit of financial help was a godsend. I was so relieved, because it just removes a big, massive burden.
Feeling able to work again, Gavin contacted the DWP and said he was ready to come off benefits. It was 3 weeks before he even got a response.
I was told that they couldn't change themselves, they couldn't alter my award claim. I had to wait until I was reassessed, which I found pretty peculiar.
And so when was that going to be? How long were you going to be?
Well, that was the thing. There was no date.
How long ago was it you sent that message?
Best part of 3 years ago.
Gavin says he has now sent several messages to the DWP, but he's given up expecting a reply. So you're working part-time now, and you're getting long-term sickness benefits. So what's the combination of those two compared to when you're working full-time with no benefits?
It's no different. So I'm probably working half the hours for the same money.
Right. So there's no financial incentive for you to get out of a situation at all?
None at all. None at all.
So why are you here? Why are you talking to me?
Because I wanted to highlight how bad things are. And this is really important. When you need this help at your lowest ill health and when you're at your worst, you can't get it. You have to wait for it. And then when you don't need it, or you feel life's much better, they won't stop giving it to you.
So it's broken at both ends?
Yeah, busted in the middle, at the ends, broken everywhere.
This is an extraordinary story, but it gets worse. Gavin wanted a reassessment, but I've discovered that the DWP pretty much stopped reassessments in lockdown and never properly started them again. So the number of people taken off benefits in this way has fallen from several hundred a day before lockdown to barely 10 a day now. That phone call Gavin's waiting for may never come.
A person's walking on a path next to a stony beach.
He's written saying he's not sick anymore, he doesn't need the benefit, he's ready to come off, he's ready to go back to work. He was told, no, sorry, you need to wait for your reassessment. That was 3 years ago, he's heard nothing, he's given up trying
to contact
them.
Give me his number and I'll sort it. Part of this is a mindset. These are individuals, human beings. Everybody is different. You know, I understand how hard this is when you have one system, and how hard it is to be flexible enough to meet an individual's needs. But we have to use our 16,000 work coaches and our hundreds of job centres right across the country, and all of the different things that our mayors, councils, the NHS are doing to get a different result.
Keir Starmer's economic strategy is to take the employment level to an all-time high. But back at JLS in Boston, where I started my investigation, they're still struggling to find workers.
Third guy I don't think was any use at all, really.
He was saying when we were stood out there that he
only came because he had to tick the boxes to be able to claim his benefits.
There's a lot of people out there that need jobs, but unfortunately, I think if the benefits look easier to claim than to go to work, and you know, this is a great job to get into.
In Keighley, Amy's planning to train as a counsellor, but she's not sure if she'll ever be able to use those skills in work.
It's scary because there's no in-between. I don't want to be in a situation where I can't provide for my child.
Unless the government can persuade people like Amy that working is a risk worth taking, its hopes of welfare reform and of economic growth will come to nothing.
Michael.
I just want to be independent. I want to get a good, decent job, a flat. I want to be able to buy something, knowing I've earned and worked for that money.
In Manchester, Michael's abandoned hopes of training as a plasterer and can't see what his next step is.
I'm just spinning around. Every day is the same thing. I can't move forward until that gets sorted out.
The latest official forecast says that by the next election, the number on long-term sickness benefits will be over 4 million.
If the first step in fixing a crisis is to acknowledge that the crisis exists, then the Labour government has certainly done so. But that is the easy part. Welfare reform has always been the toughest task in politics, but the daily damage now being inflicted in our society is so great that delay is no longer an option. This can't wait.
Hashtag C4 Dispatches.